WTLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310 The Light.
All right, we're back here, 1310 The Light. Afternoon with Amos. I'm Rick Height, sitting in for Amos. Well-deserved break. But before we went to break, I think Ted was giving us a real lesson in terms of the community's feeling about what's happening today. And Ted, I'd like you to continue that and some comments afterwards. Go right ahead.
Like I was saying, you know, women will report stuff men won't. But I think men don't really have to report things if they can handle it. It's just not law-breaking. What I'm saying that we had too many men are not in the family. And another quick thing for the police, I think you have to bring this up. Probably put some more money in your coffers. Frivolous runs, you start charging for that. People that call the police for just any reason, and it's not something that's law-breaking, you need to start charging for that.
So you're saying we got to look at false calls and start charging for that. That's an interesting premise.
Right, and I bet you you'll stop getting a lot of lost frivolous calls because people are using the police for vendettas that they can't handle themselves.
All right, this is Ted giving his advice.
And another thing, you need to start charging these people that you have to babysit their children. Like I said, I saw you down at 4th of July, and the only thing I was down there doing is babysitting people's children. I know the police was begging people, children like 6 and 7 years old, to go home. And the kids, they wouldn't go home.
You're going to get me in trouble. We're going to start talking curfew. You know what happened last time when I talked about curfew.
And start charging. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thank you for your comments. And also be a little tongue-in-cheek about this whole issue of police and accountability with children and communities. But he's right about one thing. We have to recognize that we can't waste resources. So those who make false calls and dial 911 and give false statements, you need to recognize you're jeopardizing an officer's response to someone who may really need you. And at the same time, we want to make sure the community knows we will come when you call us, but don't do it in a way that's going to cause you or us any harm. And second part of your premise was looking at youth. Yes, we are concerned about our young people. We talked about curfew because of the fact we want to take kids into custody, but more importantly, we want to make sure they're safe and they're actively engaged after certain hours, particularly 11 o'clock at night, and structured activity with adult supervision. All right. Any other comments on it? Sergeant or Major, any thoughts? All right. Moving right along. I think the idea of having a real discussion like this is working. I think we have an opportunity to hear from our family, the community we work for. But also, I think it gives us an opportunity to, I'm taking some notes and listening to some of the things that have been said relative to our conduct, our attitudes, our systems. I'm still looking for that 8 out of 10. I'm going to find him. We're going to get that 2% somehow or another. We're going to get 10 out of 10. But I think the fact is, we are 8 out of 10. It's not a bad score.
No, you know, Chief, Pierre brought up something that we could talk about a little bit in terms of what happens when a police officer gets involved in a shooting. Without going into any details of any specific cases, but what people probably don't realize is there's a whole lot of review that goes on after an officer is forced to shoot somebody. If it's something that results in the death of a person, there's automatically going to be a grand jury that's impaneled, and that process takes a while, but it's going to happen. We don't control it. We can't prevent it or expedite it. It happens on its own pace, but it does happen. In addition to that, the prosecutor's office reviews all the shootings from a criminal standpoint to make sure there are no laws broken. And aside from that, we always review any officer-involved shooting, whether it results in fatality or death or no injury whatsoever. We always review those administratively in front of a review board.
And I think the other part of it, we take that very seriously. We give you a 3,000-pound car and ammunition and a weapon, and this is the only profession that gives us authority to take the life of our customers. So we do take that seriously. Yes, you will be placed on administrative leave, pending the outcome of the investigation. Yes, you'll be looked upon in terms of making sure that we offer the employee assistance programs to you and counseling and for a period of time to make sure this impact, the impact of trauma, direct or indirect, tertiary or otherwise, the trauma that you've gone through is understood. And at the same time, we're processing to determine when and if you should go back on the street. And that's important because we want to protect the officer and the public. But I think we take it very seriously.
Absolutely.
All right. Next up in the line, 1310 The Light. Stephanie, good afternoon. Welcome to Afternoon with Amos.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
My question is regarding the mental ill community in our city. If a person is on, they're under court order to take a medication, okay, and then the police are called because they're not taking that medication, and they come out with a nurse, what is the protocol for that type? Because I have a sibling who's mentally ill, and the police were called because he's court ordered to take medication, and he didn't. But then there was some type of scuffle with a nurse. And so now instead of being placed under the mental health care, he's placed under having to go to court and possibly being put on trial. So I just want to know, like, is there a protocol for nurses when they come into what could end up being a hostile environment for them because somebody is mentally ill and off their medications? How does the law handle, is it normal or typical for a mental ill patient to be looked upon as going into the court system?
Sarah, do you want to talk about risk factors and evaluations of things?
Yes. Several of our officers are trained in critical incident training where we've had 40 hours of training with the mental ill. A lot of times I've gone out when I was out there, and still now, if there's a case where a nurse knows that she's going to come with a patient that's competitive, they will call for CIT officers. We are constantly training officers in CIT, and the school system is also, school officers are being trained in that as well. So what they do is a CIT officer is trained in the different illnesses that, these people may be on the community, you know, and it's children and it's adults. And a lot of times it might just be that they're on their medication. So we've gotten away from locking them up. You know, what happens is that we go out and we try to evaluate the situation, try to see if we can find out what kind of medication they're on, trying to find out who their doctor is, who they're being treated by, and to see if they need to go to the hospital. So what we have is a system called immediate detention. If they go willingly, that's fine. But what we will do is we will immediate detain them. And then they're held a little longer, and then they go to the hospital to be evaluated. And then the hospital have the medical personnel where they can get them the attention they need. There are some times when that person becomes combative and the officer has to take action. But the CIT officers are the ones that are usually assigned to that. And there's several officers out there. And they talk to the person. They know the tone to talk to them. They know the right things to say and what not to say to not get that person combative. They're also trained into how to calm that person down. So with that incident, that helps them.
And I think we need to talk about, ma'am, in some cases, if they're at a point where they look like they may be a threat to themselves or others, we're forced by law to take them into custody. And the idea is to get services for them and evaluate them effectively means we have to take them into custody. Now, in some cases, it is required by the court to evaluate them to determine if, in fact, they will be dealt with through either through a mental health process or through adjudicated through a criminal court. That's a decision made by the courts itself.
Okay.
But I think what we want to do is to highlight this is to show you that what we're saying about being transparent. We have a critical incident team, officers trained in mental health to understand when their affect is off, the cognitive behavior, but also how to address a person who is in a crisis.
So is it typical then for a nurse who's in a situation like this, if she is pushed or if she is involved in any type of way by the patient for criminal charges to be pressed against the patient?
Depends on the severity of it, yes, ma'am. The fact that the person may be assaulted and they want that, they may encourage that charge to be filed, or if in fact it's severe enough to where it is obvious, then charges need to be filed. Only because, again, evaluation of the situation is not made by the officer at the scene, but made by the courts.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
I hope that helps you. Okay. Next on the line is Dave, working at 1310 The Light. You're on the air.
Hey, Chief, how you doing?
We're doing the best we can. You've been listening. How we doing today?
You're doing pretty good. I want to commend you on being transparent and being proactive.
Well, I appreciate that.
Being proactive and not reactive.
We get it right. We try. We try hard. So, D, what's on your mind?
Well, we've been trying to get, our black officers to our church on the 31st of this month because we're trying to be proactive. We're trying to prevent a Ferguson, Missouri incident. And so we're having what we call our police in the pews, and we want our black police to come out and speak to our children, be able to come out and fellowship with us the last Sunday of this month. I haven't been able to reach you through your office, so when I heard you on the radio, I was like, okay, I got him now. Let me put him on the radio. Let me call him on the radio.
Well, let me put it out there for you, because I get a lot of emails. I'm going to give you mine to richard.height, H-I-T-E, at indy.gov. Let me ask you this. Where and when? It's the 31st.
It's August the 31st at 11:30 is at the Hovey Street Church of Christ.
Hovey Street Church of Christ.
Yeah, 2338 Hovey Street at 11:30.
All right. Praying and Teaching Church. All right.
That's Richard Height.
Richard.height at indy.gov. Now I want to make sure you get that. Now, here's the other thing I want you to do for me. I want you, after we have this event, we're going to come there, fellowship, spend some time talking to young people. What's going to happen on the next day? What's going to happen on the 1st?
Let me tell you what happens on the 1st with us. This past summer, we just did a 7-week leadership camp with boys between the ages of 13 to 18. Every Thursday, we're in the juvenile center teaching leadership for boys, every Thursday from 6 to 7:30 for boys that are incarcerated at the juvenile center. Every month, we work with our young boys. We're out in our community. We're picking up trash. We're touching the lives of people right here on our area. So what's going to happen on the 1st is we're going to continue our preventive work. We're trying to be proactive. We're teaching our young boys the importance of pulling their pants up. We're teaching them the importance of knowing their history. We're teaching them the importance of being young black men. That's what we're doing.
You know what? I was asking that question knowing that there are some proactive steps beyond that, but I think you highlighted the importance of not having one day events, but having a plan in place that talks about we're going to meet with the idea of action steps. So I applaud you for that. We're going to round up some people, see if we can't make that on the 31st. I'm going to come out and spend some time with you in fellowship. You heard about the chief likes to, you know, nibble every now and then. You're going to have a little something back there for chief to nibble on. You think maybe the church back in the
day? I'll ask our sisters to make the chief a plate. I know they don't mind doing that.
I think I appreciate it. They're all kidding now, but we are serious about one thing, the mission to transform our young people's lives and doing it by example.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your call. We got a leader in the community coming up. But before we go to him, we're going to take a break. It's been really, really interesting conversation here. Time is really flying. You're at 1310. The Light. Amos, you're in trouble. I like what I'm doing. I think I might just put in a bid for this time slot. What do you think, guys? Nah, I better not do that. You run me out of town. All right, we'll be right back here at 1310 a.m. The Light.
This is Emmy Award-winning anchor Andrea Moorhead from Channel 13. You're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310 The Light.
All right, we're back. 1310 The Light. Send in frames. This seat feels so good. I'm going to have to hate to give it back to him. But as we move forward, we're going to pass on a list of things for Amos to consider, one of which is talking about making sure when we have a call out to our community, it's into the kind of community. And we have young men out here who are doing excellent work, being mentors. And the call went out from the Hovey Street Christian Church, the Christ Church, rather, 11:30 a.m. on the 31st, looking for a few good men, some wearing uniforms. Doesn't matter what color it is, brown or blue, a big hat, little hat, doesn't matter. Just show up at the church. Make sure we reach out to our young people and show law enforcement cares. But we also looking for other men in the community to step up and be leaders so our young people get a chance to see what a real role model looks like. But as we're going about to get back to our calls, we have been joined in the studio this afternoon with some of our outstanding members of IMPD, Major Dave Robinson and Sergeant Kim Young has done an outstanding job in their careers and moving forward as we speak. I just want to make sure we have the dean, just one of the deans of law enforcement in this town just walked in, Assistant Chief Lloyd Crow. And Chief Crow is in charge of administration. It means he has the money, folks. He controlled that $200 million and making sure all the hiring and the firing goes on in the department and all those wonderful things that go along with keeping a ship right. But all kidding, he's a professional, been around a long time, well known in this town. Good afternoon, Chief. Thanks for stopping in.
Good afternoon, Chief. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I think you are part of the long legacy of Crows in this town. We want to make sure that you get an opportunity to say hi and speak to our community before we go back to our calls. Chief, what's important of the chief of administration? What are some of the highlights of things that you think are important to share with the community?
Well, I think some of the things that are important about administration are making sure that our officers that are out there putting their lives on the line every day have the tools that they need to work with. everything from cars to firearms to computers to bringing in new technology to help make our force more efficient are some of the things that I and the team that I work with are working on right now for IMPD.
Well, Chief, I heard some people call in this afternoon. They're concerned about our training. They say we have attitudes. What say you when it comes down to that? Do we have attitudes, and what do we do when we find an officer in need of remediation or need of corrective measure? What is the process in terms of training and education?
Yeah, I've heard that before, Chief, and when I've been out in the community talking to people, there still are people who unfortunately have encounters with officers who don't respond to situations as professionally as we expect them to. And so part of the way we deal with that is making sure, number one, that we select the right kind of individual to become an IMPD officer.
Do we need them? And we're looking for people who are, what, here for adventure or service?
No, this is, as we know, this is not like the law enforcement or the police stories that people have been watching on TV for decades. Providing law enforcement or police service to the community of Indianapolis is about service.
Well, let me ask you a very important question, Chief. Will they get out of the car?
They will absolutely get
those
out of the
recruits,
car.
We got 60 of them. Well, we then went them down to about 58, 59 now. But the 58 or so that's still there and working hard to become a young police officer, will they get out of the car?
They are trained from day one that they will be getting out of the car, Chief. I can promise you that.
They will get out of the car and get in the community, too. I promise you that. All right, we got a call from a veteran of Airways, Reverend Ajabu. Welcome to 1310 and Light. Hotep.
Hotep. It's a pleasure, man. You surprise me day in and day out. And I know you like to nibble. And I ain't mad where you go nibble.
we spread that wealth around and help the economic climate in our community. I promise you that.
Yes, yes. And first of all, let me publicly state that, man, as I get to know you, my respect for you is just escalates, and I really appreciate that you are the person that you are. And it's very apropos that Chief Crow had joined the conversation at this point, because there's really two things that I want to say that center around transparency and just being human. And when you're talking about the transparency, I would like to see officers not only have the cameras in the car, but what about body cameras, so that there is more of a record of the exchanges that they have with the populace. I was looking at a report today, and a police chief was saying that they went into a room and there was a man had a knife on a woman, and they actually shot the man. They didn't kill him, but they shot him. But the rumor got out, they shot the man in the bed. But when the people found out that they shot the man because he was threatening the life of this woman, it quelled the concern, because they understood that the policing had a reason to do that. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see officers have body cameras, which would help transparency.
You must have been talking to this vendor that has been reaching out to us here lately. Chief Crow, you want to take a...
Sure. Good afternoon, Reverend Ajabu. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
We are right now...
another statement after this.
Okay, all right. We are right now in the beginning phases of testing several different manufacturers of body-worn cameras. You know, there are a lot of advantages to having those. There are also probably some disadvantages. So we have to make sure that we look at this holistically from a policy standpoint, from a legal standpoint, to make sure that the steps that IMPD takes to employ this kind of technology is actually going to be a good fit for the agency. I mean, you can find agencies or law enforcement agencies across the country, controversial. Some agencies are very pro body-worn cameras and some agencies aren't. But we definitely see the advantages of the technology, and we're looking into doing some tests here in the very, very near future. We're just at this point, we're working out policy and SOPs that we need to have in place before we start testing.
Very true. What's your second part of your question there?
Yeah, and it's proactivity. And it looks like you've been very proactive. And in that regard, we are having a silent march, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, August 23rd. And we want to silence violence across the board. And in that regard, we want the community, and I've already talked to them out there, and they're going to turn out. But we also want to, the police to stand out so that we can have this type of rapport, whereas that there's mutual respect, whereas that we're not harassed, use their words, by the police, nor are we harassing the police when we're standing out there doing something wrong.
What location, what time?
We're talking about 34th and 4th Manor on August the 23rd at 12 noon. Now, this is one thing that we want to do. We want to extend an invitation to Officer Wren's family to come march with us because Major Davis's family is going to be there. And her words of getting out of the car, she at no time wanted to act like or even appear to say that you shouldn't get out of the car, that you shouldn't do your job when it's time to get out of the car and do your job. She was saying that because she said if the officer had waited for backup to get out of the car, then maybe things would have been different. Not that, if you'd have stayed in the car, you wouldn't have got shot. No. That woman has compassion for life, and to show her compassion, and she plans on being there. We want to extend a invitation to Officer Wren's family because there is no animosity there. There's compassion. They are very concerned about the loss. And we want to bring it all together to where it's that even when you talk about domestic violence, police are getting into domestic violence, people are getting into domestic violence, we want to silence all of the violence. And so this march is a silent march to send the word and the message that through silence, we want to silence the violence and come together as a community. And there's going to be subsequent things that come out of this march, which we'll share as we're going on, because the people are saying enough, and there's got to be enough if we interact and say, look, we are.
Brother, I appreciate you as always when you put it out there loud and strong. 34th and Forest Manor from noon on the 23rd. We won't ever. We have to recognize that we as law enforcement can't ever denounce the fact that a mother who either son has been lost and injured, in either case, whether it be an officer in the street or a citizen, there are no winners in a situation like that. What we want to do is talk about bringing about peace in our community. And we have to do that with recognizing that times are tough, but at the same time, we have a representative out there in the community that says that we, one time or another, have to recognize our people are hurting, and hurt people hurt people. And that representative was made it very clear that he would give his life, and he has done that to making sure that people are safe. So he lost his life in the battle, and he recognized he stayed in the battlefield for 21 and a half years, and he could have gone anywhere else to work. Officer Wren, we recognize him and dedicate this show to him. Thank you, brother. Brevin?
Thank you.
We'll
look forward
to you
on the 23rd.
All right, brother. See you soon. All right. Good afternoon, Mark. You're up. Welcome to 1310.
Hey. How you doing, Chief?
You're welcome.
Hey, Chief, thank you for coming on the show. I never can remember a Chief of Police coming on 1310, hosting the show, taking all these calls.
I don't know. After this, the name may run me off. He may not have me back anytime soon, man. Well, thank
hey,
you
I
for
have
your
a comment. My comment is more for the community. Us as a community, we have to realize the only one hurting blacks basically are blacks. You know, everybody, we have a few bad apples in our community that make our whole community look bad. And in turn for that, instead of standing up to the bad apples, we come up with this no snitching thing. And the only people these folks are hurting are other blacks. I think the biggest thing we can do is we need to start opening our mouths, because these people are hurting our community, tearing up, running down our property value, if we were to open our mouths and let the police know who these people are, this could be dealt with. I know people worry about their safety, but could you tell us how we could report people doing crimes and stay anonymous where we are not injured, okay? Because we do ourselves a disservice if we know there's a cancer in our community, and instead of reporting the cancer, we continue to let the cancer just run around, wild and out in our community, when we should tell the authorities, and this could be dealt with. So could you tell us a way how we can take and report people and stay anonymous? Well, we won't be injured, because people say, if I tell, they're going to get me and all this stuff. So could you please tell us a way where we can tell on folks, mm-hmm. get this cancer out of our community that's making us look bad?
I'm going to give you a couple of numbers, one of which is 262 tips. You remain anonymous. What we've done is kind of pretty much collapsed all our hotlines to that number because we found it to be very effective. And you remain anonymous. Plus, there is a reward offered in many of those cases. The other one is texting to 888-7777, 888-7777-37. Make sure that we do that in anonymous fashion. You can text that information so we fully get it in a timely fashion. Now, if it's happening in progress, folks, we want you to do what, let us know, by dialing 911. But we're looking for ongoing complaints and problems in the community to be able to address those. But at the end of the day, it's going to take all of us. We need eyes and ears out there, because the people who we're talking about are not strangers. They didn't parachute in from some planet. They're in our neighborhoods. These are our children. These are our relatives. These are people we know. And we have to be willing to give them, well, my grandmother used to say, that tough love. But we have to be serious about the mission of making sure those offenders, those persons who commit violent crime in our community, are called to justice, that they serve the time indicated, prescribed by law, and that we work too tirelessly and too hard to give up ground to those individuals who really have made it very clear that life is merely bent on committing heinous crimes in our community, and they're taking advantage. They're impacting our property values. They are impacting our ability to bring tourism and other industries to town. So, yeah, we have a collective responsibility to be able to identify those persons and call them out. But at the same time, we have a good community, and we're still only talking about 1% of the population engaged in activity. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you. All right, next up on the line, Brother Hotep.
How are you doing there?
Fine, sir.
All right. You're from my hometown, Gary, so I give you all the respect.
You're from GI, huh? What part of town?
West Side. Westside. My last name. You know my dad, Ray. Big Ray, they called him.
Oh, yeah. What high school did you go to?
I went to Horseman. We won't hold that again.
I got a hand going up in there. The sergeant youngest from Horseman.
79. Roscoe Fleming was on the force.
Ron Fleming.
Ron Fleming.
He had a strong reputation. I know him.
Hey, we just want to say, man, me and my family want to say, hey, I've had to call for a few things. Maybe the alarm may went off. The police have been fine, kind, upright. 95.5% of the people in every profession try to do the right thing. You got 4.5 in every profession that ain't worth 3 days' lives. We don't want to focus on the 4.5. Let's focus on the 95.5. And then let's just be honest about what's really going on in the neighborhood. You know where we come from. And you know where other people come from. There's a lot of stuff going on that people don't want to admit to. There's a lot of illegal activity going on. I got friends staying in Brightwood, some in East Little Harbor. We know what's going on out here. The community, stop lying.
But I
we
think at the same time, it's a little safer here. Don't you agree? It's a little bit safer. You feel more comfortable here in India. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about cities, and we have to admit that we've been blessed in having a citizenry here that really puts arms around itself and pretty much does a good job.
When we moved here, it was 28 murders in February 93. It was 28 murders, and they were complaining about that. You used to leave your car door open. I stayed out by Country Club before they even built up out there and stuff like that. We leave the car door open, apartment unlocked. Now you can't do any of that. So there is a consistent problem. Most of it is drugs. I don't think it's a coincidence that Joe Hodgson resigned, and now we're getting all these large busts from the federal level. So I hope that you all still coordinate on the federal level to try to rid these communities of the infestation. Because once they get in there, then it's hard to get them out. And I know you say you worked with the group that helped tackle the wire people in Baltimore, so that's a big task. So you already know what goes on.
Yes, sir.
Just keep up the good work, and we appreciate y'all. Appreciate you.
Thank you. You said a lot. I think the mission of policing is more than ours. We have community, we have federal and state partners, but we also have you, here at 1310 AM, The Light. We'll be right back to share our thoughts and continue this dialogue.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson. You're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light, in the source of inspiration and praise.
All right, we're heading down the stretch, folks. It's been a great afternoon. I've enjoyed talking to you and spending time with the Radio 1 family, the 1310 AM family. And I've been holding roll call for Amos Brown. He hasn't answered yet, so I think we'll probably just take over and stay here for a little while longer.
Sounds like a good idea.
All right, what do you think, Chief?
I think it's a good idea.
All right, what do you think of the dialogue? We've had a lot of people talk about policing and talk about ideas about what we should do as a collective community. Are we on task? Are we on point? Are we making a difference?
I think definitely we are, you know, and it starts with, again, going back to hiring the right kind of people, making sure we get them in our academy and train them right. We have policies and procedures that dictate, you know, how our officers should function. And when they are out of line, when things don't go right, they're not professional, we need to be able to hear from the community about those issues as well. So I know Major Robinson's talked about how to get in touch with the Citizens Police Complaint Board. And I just would like to urge, you know, our community that when things don't go the way they think they should, don't hesitate to let us know about it because we like that community feedback.
And I think we also need to talk about how we've been very focused and targeted in our neighborhoods where we have to make a difference. Our initiatives we put forth are making a difference in terms of this whole notion of police and community coming together. Your life does matter. We want to make sure we talk about those points. The summer employment piece was very successful. But we also know that our police officers put themselves in harm's way, and we want to remember Officer Wren and his family. And all those who go out and make the city that much safer. We got hard-working men and women, as we speak, responding to calls for service, taking runs, and making sure you're safe. Same time, they're putting bad guys in jail. We're putting the right people behind bars. We're looking at the quality versus quantity. We're not looking to wrestle our way out of this problem. But, however, we are seeing a difference being made through our social network of those service providers who step up and assist us. So we need you to continue to do that for us as we go about making this city that much safer. We got some calls still in line. We got Tamara.
Hi, I have a question and kind of a comment as well. It's been a lot of discussion about increasing the police force and the officers that are needed to police the streets or to address the lies and crime. Who is responsible for the way that the dispatchers respond on the call when you call in to 911? I have called multiple times in a neighborhood as I watched something beginning to transpire. And on a particular call, I had called in the young lady while I waited 10 minutes because there's an automated system if you don't get straight through that talks to you, puts you in the IVR. But then the dispatcher said to me, I asked her, could she dispatch an officer? She asked me, had anybody been shot yet? It was a group of about 50 people at a corner. They were yelling really loud, and they weren't having a good time. They were arguing back and forth. And you could see the two groups coming together. It was probably around about 9 or 10 o'clock at night. She asked me, had anybody been hurt yet? She told me she didn't see a purpose in dispatching an officer. While we were on the phone talking, somebody pulled up and started shooting while we were on the phone talking. And then she said, okay, I'll dispatch an officer now. So I just want to know, who is it that's responsible for making sure that you have enough dispatchers to be able to dispatch the police force, and then who trains them to make sure that they are sensitive to situations to ensure that the police do get there before something transpires into something that becomes worse and puts everybody in a situation that is unsafe?
All right. Major, you want to take a stab at that? We're going to talk about the relationship with our call takers and the county sheriffs.
Absolutely. That's something that probably a lot of people aren't aware of, that the dispatchers and control operators that dispatcher officers to various runs are not employees of the police department. They work for the sheriff's department. It's a division within that agency. Has been for quite some time. So we have typically a good relationship with them. We count on them for quite a bit. The officers on the street do, but they are not directly answerable to the police department.
But I think that would, and also, man, we want to make sure we're not passing a buck and pointing fingers. I think it's important that we talk about in context information they may ask that may be necessary to determine the level of threat that's happening and risk factors to the community. And sometimes they ask questions that may not make sense. We want to make sure we fully vet that too to make sure people understand that they are taking information to pass that information on so we know what we're walking into, riding into ahead of time. So thank you for the information. We'll pass it on to the American Sheriff's Office, but I just want to make sure we do due diligence and talk about the good work our call takers and our dispatchers do. If any other person in the room wants to stand up here and take over the radio station for Amos, just raise your hand, because I think that this is good stuff. I think we can do this for a whole another week and still not cover everything the community wants us to do. So I see no takers. So Amos, you can have the seat back pretty soon. But till we do, we got Jackster on the line. Welcome to 1310 AM The Light.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chief Hyde and guest. You're doing a fine job up there.
Thank you, kind sir.
Thank you.
Okay, what I called in for is a little brighter note there. If I can get two CDL callers to call, I'm going to leave my number off the phone with a guy. The company I work for needs two drivers right away. And, Chief, you're doing a fine job. You just got some bad apples on the force, but you ain't got no way of picking them out. Most of them do a real fine job. You have a big old fine day.
Well, don't go anywhere. You're giving something away. You're giving away something that's needed. You're telling me you have two or three jobs to hire someone with CDL license. Is that right?
I've been announcing it in public. Now I'm on the air, and I'm going to leave my number with the guy off the air, and if they call, you'll give it to them. I can put them to work tomorrow.
That's outstanding. Paying it forward. That's what we're talking about on the airwaves. We're generating jobs this afternoon, folks. A very fine engineer will take your information, sir, and thank you again for that.
You're very welcome.
All right.
Hey, Chief, if I could just take 2 seconds to give some information to that previous caller, because I think it's important for people who have complaints about any system kind of know what their avenues are and able to resolve it. So if you're not satisfied with something that you deal with when you call into dispatch to report a crime or some kind of activity, they have supervisors there. I would encourage you to call 327-3811, the non-emergency line for the Marion County Emergency Communications Agency, and just ask to speak to a supervisor. They have very competent people working there. They'll help you and work with you and try to resolve any issues that you might have with any dispatcher.
Excellent point. But I think we don't negate the fact that they do an outstanding job under tremendous pressure oftentimes, the dispatchers and the call takers.
Absolutely.
And we want to make sure we mention that as well. Thank you, Chief. All right. Next on the line is Terry. Good afternoon, Terry. Welcome to 1310 AM.
Thank you, sir. And, Chief, I've not had an opportunity to personally welcome you to the city. I know you didn't just get here, but welcome to you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And health, success, and blessings to you.
Thank you.
I'm a longtime voter, and I want to say to everybody there, since you're in administration and internal affairs, I'm sure you've heard of the Gang in Blue. They are sometimes scary, and they can be terrifying. Okay, I have some questions, and because I've waited about an hour it took me about an hour to get through, if you can just give me some brief answers to these, it'll be great. Mm-hmm. What is it with police officers' attitudes toward internal affairs and turning in other officers, as they would have the public turn in one another?
Okay. You want to give me all of them, or you just want to do one at a time?
Oh, one at a time, please.
Okay. I think one of the missions that we all have to understand, the police officers are held to a higher standard. We all take an oath to swear to the Constitution, State of Indiana, and to faithfully, diligently, without partiality, carry out the duties to the best of our ability, so help us God. But we also took a fiduciary responsibility that if a crime is occurring in our presence, to act upon it, whether it be a citizen and or police officer. So we're held to a standard, and there are times when you may not hear publicly how we got come by that information. When we do internal investigation, I don't want to steal too much of the major thunder, but there are times when officers have and will continue to come forward. Major, you want to continue that?
Chief, you're absolutely correct about that. It's not something that's visible to the public, but a lot of times investigations we carry out are based, at least in part, on information we receive from other officers or other civilian members of the police department.
Talk about what drives the action. Two things, and basically in terms of policing, what are they? The general orders and what?
Rules and regulations.
Rules and regulations. So they're a violation of the law, violation of general orders and rules and regulation. They're subject to be somehow or another in the major's office and eventually on the chief's desk. Second question, sir.
What are the police department's efforts to increase representation of women and all people of color?
Outstanding question, because we can brag about a little bit about that. I was hoping that call would come in. You must have been reading my mind. Chief Crow, talk about what's happening in our training academy.
Well, first of all, we are trying to recruit actively the people that represent the community that we're providing a service to. We have a recruit class in there right now, and I was trying to get those numbers as I was leaving the office. I don't have them specifically, but we do have a very diverse class in this ninth recruit class that's training right now. The class before that, the eighth recruit class, I believe we had, I want to say 23% diversity in that class. And so that's something we continue to strive for because we understand how important it is to have a police force that reflects the community that we're serving.
And I carry those numbers in my head, sir. Our current diversity class is up close to 35%, which is historic in terms of women, minorities, Latinos, African-Americans, and women. So we have crossed that line. We are looking at a process to allow us to be more proactive in identifying persons who want to be police officers, but it has to be reflective of the city we serve. So we're working towards that aim.
But we're also looking for the community's help because you know people in your community, in your area, in your sphere of influence that might make successful police officers. So we're always looking for your help for that.
Spirit of a service, not adventure. Next question, sir.
Well, thank you. And one part I think I left out here. Specific sensitivity awareness training title and the length of training, if you can say.
Repeat that again, sir.
What is the name of the specific sensitivity/awareness training, and can you say the length of the time of training?
Well, one of the things we've done, I'm going to let Chief Crow answer this, is change the model of training, moving away from the linear thinking and moving toward adult learning model. So we're scenario-based. But before you even go into that, what we did was a total hiring turnaround where we have people actually involved in community activities before becoming police officers. We have events staged and we have events where they have to attend as trainees and potential trainees to be able to be part of so that we get a chance to observe their interaction with the community. Chief, you want to talk about some of the other parts of the equation?
Sure. What's made the biggest difference in our training, caller, is that, you know, historically, like back when I came through and many years after that through Training Academy, we would have human behavior or cultural awareness as a standalone class. And so now what we have changed in the last 3 years is integrating cultural awareness throughout the other learning domains. So you don't just have recruits sitting in a classroom talking about cultural awareness for 5 or 6 hours or 8 hours. What happens is when we're doing traffic stops, when we're talking about use of force, when we're doing physical training, that cultural diversity and that human behavior awareness is interrelated or integrated in all those other learning blocks of instruction that we put recruits through.
Let's talk about specifics, sir. I think you want to hear that. When we talk about certain techniques that are used in the community that have been historically challenged, like chokeholds, do we choke people out in the IMPD?
That's never been trained in the agency in the 29 years I've been here, Chief.
No karate chokeholds. The things that we know for a fact have created problems in other places. We try to avoid those. But I think the process Chief describes is, and when you're talking about cultural awareness, we know for a fact any part of the process that could be challenged in terms of history and concern relative to our tactics, we want to make sure we attack that proactively. For example, Major talks quite frequently about the whole idea of reasonableness versus with the old force continuum when it comes down to use of force. The old days, you can escalate force. We're trying to de-escalate, but the old force continuum kind of like encourages us to escalate force. We're moving more into an understanding that the officer has to own it. If he makes a determination to use force, he or she now owns it, and they have to explain that not only to us, but also before a court of law.
Okay, sir. And, Chief, I think you were reading my mind because my next question was, how does the Indianapolis Marion County Police Department avoid shootings like that in Ferguson, Missouri, and choking like that in New York?
Well, I kind of did kind of read your mind because that's been on my mind quite a bit, too. How are we? Do we have the policies in place? Are they actively being used? And do we actually make sure we have the checks and balances? And I'm proud to say we do. And with our current process, you heard the major talk about IA Pro and being looking at earlier warning systems, but I can tell you use of force is taken very seriously. When we have a complaint, it goes, not only is it investigated, but if it's found to be sustained, it goes before a board of captains, and then comes to me, and then go before a mayor board if necessary for final adjudication. But again, it goes back to reporting. We have to know if, in fact, our systems are not working, our training is not working, but we have to report out. Let me give you a strange statistic that's been part of our culture in policing across the country. Do you know that 80% of the men, most of which are complainants in these cases, 80% of the time they don't report out the incident that occurred? It's their significant other, the woman in their life, or some other significant other person, a pastor, minister, a clergyman of some type. They're the ones who report the incident. That's kind of interesting.
No, didn't know that.
Yes, sir. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I just want to say that the radio station, the talk show, are in really good hands. And for the sergeants, the major, deputy chief, and thank you, chief, for being there. Thanks a lot for the good answers, and be safe out there. All police officers and citizens both can look at each other fairly, equally as human beings, because everybody's life counts.
Thank you, sir. Well
said. Thank you.
That's the right question. We'll get the right answers. All right. Next in line, I see a good friend, Sam Carson. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to 1320.
Hey, Assistant Chief Crow, how are you, gentlemen?
Pretty good.
Fine, sir.
Hey, I want to say a couple things real quick, because I know we're running out of time. Chief, now you're from Gary, Indiana, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then Assistant Chief Crow, you're from Indianapolis. Your father, for those that don't know, coached Oscar Robertson. He won the 1955 and 1956 championship at Christmas Baptist High School. So, anyway, the thought I have is I would love to see a basketball game between Indianapolis and Gary. I would love to see Chief Pike, you would coach the Gary team, Assistant Chief Crow, you would coach the Indianapolis team. And, I mean, it could be big fun. It could really be something nice. And I just think it needs to happen. And then the winner is presented the Ray Crow Trophy, whatever you guys decide to call it. But whatever I can do to help, I'm on board, because I'm proud of both of you gentlemen. I know you both started from the bottom. Now you're here. So, and I got love for you. That's all I want. You brothers take care.
Thanks, Sam. I thought you were going to ask Crow my height to play one-on-one. I said, Ben Gay Squad. But thank you for you. If you put that together, we'll make sure we try to pull that off, because that would be interesting to see.
Thank you, Sam. You know your history, that's for sure.
That's the old days of Roosevelt versus Christmas Axe again, all over again.
That's right. That's right.
All right, moving on to Anonymous. Good afternoon. Welcome to 1310 to Light. Anonymous, you still there? All right.
Hey, Chief, while we're waiting for our next caller, can I just say, anyone who knows anyone or anybody who's interested in joining this police force needs to get in touch or go to joinimpd.indy.gov.
So put it out there again.
We're always looking for good people. That's www.joinimpd.indy.gov.
But judging by the conversation of our good leader and the mayor and the public safety director and President of City Council, I think we're going to have a steady flow of business for you, dear Chief.
And that's good news.
I think it's good news also. We want to thank our opportunity to share this afternoon. Thank Radio 1, and particularly Amos Brown, for allowing us to be here and share some thoughts from old-timer in policing. But also, you heard the young minds of a great major of public safety, Dave Robinson, and an up-and-coming leader in the police department, Sergeant Kim Young. But let me just part you, leave you with these thoughts. As we move forward in changing our community, we can't do it alone. We will never arrest our way out of this problem, and to whom God has given responsibility, much is required. You've been a great audience. You've asked us great questions. Hopefully, they'll have us back one day real soon. If not, we'll meet you in the community. All right. This is Rick Hite, Chief of Police, signing off. Have a blessed day. See ya.